The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show in Chicago. It's a very, very good show.
Afternoons on the Score.
I will just say, actually, it's been amazing working with you.
You as well.
Great to see you back on TV. I just want to thank everyone here at Fox Sports One and Colin's amazing team here at The Herd. I've got the best producers in local radio. Shout out to Shane Tanney, the Parkins and Spiegel mob. I'll be back with them tomorrow. But it's been a complete thrill to be here. And, you know, we didn't crash the car. Everything is still going well. Uncle Colin will be back tomorrow, so you are in excellent hands. But I just wanted to say once again, thank you. My name is Danny Parkins. It's been a pleasure to be with you on The Herd.
Yeah, that is how I ended the show yesterday, sitting in for Colin. Of course, wanted to give you guys our show, which is, you know, this is what I've ever wanted to do. This is my dream job since I was like 16 years old, do afternoon drive in Chicago. But this opportunity kind of came along, and I was like, holy cow, this is really cool. And it was an insane thing. Talked about it a little bit already with Dan and Lawrence in transition.
Nice article on Barrett Sports Media.
Already?
Already. Yeah, about 20 minutes ago, dude.
Really?
They already wrote up you talking about it during transition.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll check that out. Thank you to Barrett Sports Media.
And they did another feature on Tanny in the same time. They're so efficient.
He's good. I can't wait for their write-up on whether or not Grody should have read the rundown. That's gonna be big news.
I'll give you the answer to that.
One word, yes. So, I mean, I don't want to completely repeat myself from earlier, but just I'm not going to pretend like this wasn't a huge deal for me. Like, I'm not going to pretend that. It was, you guys know my default is to kind of be self-deprecating or to maybe dismiss something like that. Like, this was a huge deal, and I put a lot of pressure on myself. I think it went very well. I'm really, really proud that they even asked. It's one of those things where, like, the accomplishment is getting asked. Like, that's the accomplishment. Single-digit number of people have filled in for Colin since he's been on TV. So to now be on that list is pretty damn insane. So it was a huge, huge thrill, and I was really happy to do it. I want to get these guys' reaction to it because I think that'll probably be funnier than me, like, navel-gazing or whatever. But I will also just say this. Bears fans better be ready. I mean, like, I'm talking to, you know, the biggest producers for the biggest show with one of the biggest commentators in the space. And, you know, I'm out there and I'm doing Cowboys takes and Dolphins takes and Niners takes and Team USA takes or whatever. But then I'm sure we'll get to some of it. But they're like, the Bears are going to be a big talker for us. I was like, oh, yeah, really? He's like, we can't wait for Hard Knocks. So, like, how we're talking about how we're going to do Hard Knocks on, like, the Wednesdays after the episodes air on Tuesdays, they're going to be doing big Wednesday feature stuff on Hard Knocks. Caleb is a talker for them. Eberflus has even become a little bit of a talker for them.
Well, yeah, you were our national tastemaker. We did, I forgot if it was the top of the three or the four on that first day when you did your coach of the year stuff. We're like, oh, this national pundit is talking about Matt Eberflus, coach of the year. We better run with this and structure our segment around it. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
We're able to use that.
You're good. Good. I'm glad. Listen, you guys were never far from my mind as I was doing all of this stuff. I'm like, ooh, Tanny's going to have this. Tanny's going to have that. Like, how's this going to play back? It was so. Maybe you guys will enjoy just hearing me squirm. I haven't watched any of it back. I mean, a couple of the clips on Instagram, but for the most part,
just sadly, you know, you did a great job. I say sadly because I think about our show and this audience always. And the ideal situation is if it was a train wreck, and it wasn't. So in that regard, you know, I don't feel great about it, but you did an awesome job. And
we'll try to
make it as entertaining for this audience as possible.
That is the goal. What was it? This might sound weird. What was it like to watch?
Well, can we start with some of the fashion critique, Shane? What do we think about that? Did you anticipate, you know, did you think you were going to be just have the one camera shot on you the whole time? Because they did wheel around the desk and they showed like your little Lululemon pants action there.
Oh,
and I was wondering if you would have chosen a different pair of pants had you known.
I didn't think about the side angle shot. I think the Lululemon pants work. You guys are the only ones who have critiqued my pants choice.
No. See, the pants work. The pants didn't work with the bright blue shirt. The bright blue shirt was too dressy, but I didn't know if someone else was dressing you. And then to piggyback off of that, you know how I feel. I think you should have been able to wear the nice Lululemon pants and just a clean-fitted T-shirt.
Right.
Did they implement the collar rule?
So Colin,
stupid.
Colin's thing is
they flew Dustin out, and he said yes, collared shirts all the time.
Yeah, he said like no suits, no ties, but collared shirt. Like
I mean, I'll respect Colin, but dumb.
Like button down, like a button down shirt.
Okay, so not your fault.
No logo, no crazy design. Like a fairly neutral button down shirt.
Okay, not your fault then.
So then Steph. I had Steph pick the of my button down collection. She picked the shirts.
Okay,
so that a lot to work with there. I would imagine Steph. Yeah. That's a tough job.
Yeah. Radio guys, we don't have them.
Yeah. So that was so. Yeah, those were my shirts. And that was that.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know. But they steam them. They iron them. Whatever the best way that shirt can look. They put it together. So that is the best possible presentation of your boy. Makeup artist, hairstylist, two separate people, one for hair, one for makeup, and someone who like dresses and or like steams and presses the shirt.
All right, so speaking of that, I thought the contour on your cheeks could have been a little bit better. I wanted the cheekbones to be a little bit more pronounced. I need some shading, some highlight on the bone, some contour on the cheek itself.
I asked for a jawline. She laughed at me.
Okay.
Apparently they can't do that.
I mean, I steamed Tanny's t-shirt today when he got in.
Yeah, no, you guys are friendly like that.
I take it over into my steam room. steam it up for him.
You look good. You look very good.
Bernstein's always in there.
Yeah. Weird. Like, yeah. This is how I work out.
They have millions of followers on social media, so it's hard to consume like every comment on Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter. But there were definitely a lot of like, who the bleep is this guy? There was like, you know, why they let the guy from Best Buy give sports takes.
You popped up in my wife's social media algorithm.
No.
And she asked, she said, I didn't realize that the term social studies teacher was considered an insult, but someone said that about you.
Yeah.
In a derogatory way.
Yeah, who's this social studies teacher giving sports takes? I had like 600 likes next to it when I checked it. And that was a while ago.
All right, so good. You mold children's minds? Great.
Yeah. With,
awesome.
Yeah,
good for you, dude.
With hot takes.
It's a compliment.
Yeah. So, you know, that was there. You cannot, and you're next to Ashley Brewer, this gorgeous, you know, talented woman. And like, she's, it's like when I did the shows with,
Speaks,
Anthony Herron and, oh my God, why am I blanking on her name?
Jen Sturger?
Jordan Cornette's wife. What's Jordan Cornette's wife? When I would do those shows with her on Fox, I was like, what's going on? Like, how am I up here next to you people? You people look like you were the prom...
Shea Pepler.
Well, you're the prom king and queen, and then you got the court jester or something like next to you guys in crystal clear HD. It was, yeah, so that was a little awkward.
And you thought that she was pointing out that fact in the first 30 seconds where Danny had a perceived slight. We're not even a minute into the show.
I don't know what this is. What did I say?
Welcome into the herd. I am not Colin Cowherd. I am Danny Parkins filling in for Colin, which let's take a moment to celebrate that. Thank you. And I'm here with Ashley Brewer.
Hey, I am not Jason McIntyre, but I am Ashley Brewer. It's great to be here with you, Danny.
This is so exciting.
I know.
Can you believe they're letting us take this plane for a little test flight here?
I don't know who pulled these strings, but I am grateful. You're the radio guy. I'm the TV girl. Today, we're going to make something special together.
Seeing me. You think everyone knows that I'm the radio person?
No.
Thank you so much for pointing
that
out.
It's going to be a blast.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Great to work with you. Looking forward to it.
There it is.
Not everyone's taking a shot at you. She's just talking about what jobs you have.
There it is.
That's it.
That is the insecurity of being on national TV in high definition next to someone who is objectively, by any standard, beautiful.
Don't do that. Don't do that next time.
You point out that I'm the guy who looks like he should be on the radio.
You dress for the job that you want.
Yeah.
Act like you belong.
Yeah, you're right. You know, Tanny, that is... I forgot I said that. You are...
Boiler room, act as if. Yeah. It's like, you think about it all the time.
She said, you're the radio guy. But she meant like that's why Colin is a radio guy. I'm in his chair.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I tried to make the joke about my looks.
No one else thought that.
Okay. Well, I did.
You thought she was making the joke about your looks.
I did.
Yeah.
I thought it was at least in play that she was making the joke about my looks. Yeah, okay, that's a good point. Right,
and that's not
first 30 seconds of me being on Colin Cowherd. That's funny.
And, right, and that's not the only time that you made it clear that you felt slighted in the first show.
What else did I do?
This is also pretty surreal, as I was told I get to introduce and welcome to the set.
This is tough.
One of the greatest NFL reporters and commentators, or NBA, just doing NFL. I'll ask her about my NFL totals. She can do anything. Rachel Nichols, it's an honor to have you on the herd.
This is awesome.
I'm a silent reporter for Monday Night Football. I cover plenty of football.
That's true. That's true. I was just thinking NBA. Well, do you have a favorite over-under?
My over-under is we make it through this segment.
Okay.
That's good.
I'll take the over.
Although our relationship is not off to a good start. I'm sorry to inform you.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
You don't drink coffee.
Oh,
and I don't trust you now.
You were angry that you didn't get Rachel Nichols to blow you a kiss like she did to Ashley, someone that she's known for a while.
Okay. That was the moment that was the most awkward by far for me. That like stuck with me after the show. That's a weird spot. I am doing a take on NFL over-unders for the top of the 10 o'clock Pacific hour. Three overs that I like, three unders that I like, and I pissed off apparently the entire city of Philadelphia with a 60-second comment about the Philadelphia Eagles. But then there's no break. She is standing offset, and it's like you got to welcome Rachel Nichols onto the show. Like I'm introducing her to come onto the set at the Tonight Show. It's a very strange thing. So I fumbled it.
Isn't Ashley supposed to be your Andy Richter?
Again, I don't know what anyone is supposed to be. It was my first time doing it.
Okay.
It was day one. It was very strange. But
You salvaged it with Rachel, though.
Rachel, I will try coffee for you.
Oh, man. Yeah. I like you now after this anyway, so you don't even have to.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. It's an honor.
Thank
Rachel
you.
Rachel Nichols, very much appreciated. We got Herdline coming up in just a little bit, but also Cam Newton with some interesting comments on Dak Prescott.
Yeah, that is true. They were fairly interesting. We saved it with Rachel. We had great off-air conversation afterwards. She was very cool. She is excellent. But yeah, that would have been an intro that I would have liked back. The introduction of Rachel Nichols. That was, oh man.
So like one of the big things that I was waiting for.
Yeah, here we go.
Was Eric Mangini, the man genius. And I know you guys, you know, you met at Nick's wedding.
Yep.
There was like a knowing, if you go back and watch it, there was a knowing like smile that both of you guys had. Like, hey, I know you and I know you as well. But I thought, I was like, oh, hopefully they get into some Sopranos talk here.
Back in on the herd, I'm Danny Parkins in for Colin. We'll get to the news with Ashley Brewer in just a little bit, but absolutely thrilled to welcome in former Jets coach, former Browns coach, former coach of the year. It is Eric Mangini with us on the herd. Coach, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. Good to see you, Danny.
Good to see you as well.
You know who's in tonight? Man Genius.
The Jets coach, sweetie. I should go say hello.
I didn't get it, though. You know?
So, was thinking about you.
You were too busy talking about the NFC East or something.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, their tech, we didn't get to be able to put guests on with Zoom until 2.5 years after COVID. With their tech, you can see the guests because he was joining from his house in Cape Cod. I'm in the studio in L.A., they're like, you know, he's dialed in that basically the second you go to break, it's a 7-minute break or whatever it is. They're like, Danny, do you want to say hello to Coach Mangini? And then they just put him up on the monitor and I'm talking to him. And so we talked about the wedding and I told him, I said, hey, coach, like I said to my wife on the dance floor, like 5 glasses of wine deep, it's the Jets coach, sweetheart. I should go say hello. Right. And he started dying laughing. And he goes, do you know how much mileage I've gotten out of that line? Do you know how many times I've heard that? And so we're talking about it off air. And then he's like,
his son, I don't know how old his kid is. It's early 20s. That's how it sounded. He's like, he finally watched The Sopranos for the first time through. And his now son just saw that episode like a few weeks ago and said the line to him about
it. That's awesome.
Imagine, yeah, it was awesome. So I had the full conversation with him, Danny. But it was,
as long as you had it on, that's great. I love that.
But I didn't know like that was how it was going to be, right? And so like, so that, because Rachel was the first guest and she was in person, and then that one happened, and so like I was like, oh, I didn't know that I got to talk to these people for 5 minutes before you go on. It was great. But so yeah, that the Sopranos interaction with the Man Genius happened, and so that was also the smirk, because we were talking about, I was like, you know, this is our second conversation ever, Coach, but our first sober conversation, because I was like, I was hammered when I approached.
Yeah, I know the look.
Yeah,
a little history behind that look.
Yeah, there was we had a very good off air conversation. That's hilarious.
But yeah, you got, you know, there was one thing though that our listeners, they want to know: did you talk about this on a national level? And of course, you know, this is specifically for like John Greenberg, who we were texting about this the entire 2 days you were out there.
Oh, good.
But yes, the topic that the Chicago audience cares about the most finally came up.
I don't think it was in the fine print or anything like that. Maybe it's cliche, but the Cowboys are always in the news.
Has to be.
So I think I got to do a little bit of Cowboys here. Yes, the boot is off for Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott, Dak Prescott, the Cowboys, Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott, Cowboy, Dak Prescott, Cowboy. The Cowboys, Dak Prescott, Dallas, Dak Prescott, the Cowboys, Dak Prescott, Dak Prescott, Dallas, Dak Prescott, the Cowboys, Dak Cowboy, Dak Cowboy, Dak, the Cowboys, Dak Prescott, Dak Prescott, Dak being the quarterback of the Cowboys, and for the Cowboys, Dak Dallas, the Cowboys, Dak Prescott, Dak, Dallas, Dak Prescott, Cowboys quarterback, Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
Dak Prescott, again, Dak Prescott.
All right.
Dak Prescott, the Dallas Cowboys, Dak, the Dallas Cowboys, Dallas. All right, so Dallas, the Cowboys, Dak Prescott, Dallas Cowboys, CeeDee Lamb.
It was not doctored. It was over 2 days, though.
Is Skip standing back there with a gun to your head? Like, you better bring up Dak.
Or I'm going to burn this jersey.
Holy crap, Tanny, that is incredible. Oh, my God.
Was that planned?
No, I mean, no. So
walk our audience through like the Cowboys thing. Because I just know there's a guy at an airport somewhere. It's like, what do you say about Dak? He's at an airport bar having an IPA at 7:30.
Right. All right. So, yeah, it is national television. You are on in barbershops and airports and everywhere. You got to try to cast as wide of a net as possible, for sure. So, for an NFL story, they're much more interested in Aaron Rodgers than they are in Trevor Lawrence, even. And Trevor Lawrence is a big deal, but like more people know about Aaron Rodgers. So like big teams, big fan bases, big names, like wide appeal, right? LeBron, Aaron Rodgers, it's why they're rooting for the Bears, like to be a big story and to be relevant. So yes, there is no like contractually obligated thing, but when I came in on day one, I obviously watch and consume a lot of these stuff. It's on the air in the studio. I know they talk Cowboys, and I genuinely do think that that Dak will sign before the season starts, even though nobody else seems to, and the reporting says that won't happen. I think it's going to happen. And so when I came in with that as one of my takes, it was funny. Like, you guys know, like for the show, like we all do our jobs or whatever. But like, I generally speaking know what I want the lead to be, like what my strongest take is. For this show, I knew what like my takes were, but I was kind of deferring to them, like, well, where do you think, is this like a top of the hour thing? Like, where do you think this should go? And they were immediately like, well, your Dak take should lead the show. And I was like, well, there's nothing that really happened about it. They're like, doesn't matter. Just say that the walking boot is off and then get into your Dak take. I'm like, oh, okay. that is enough of an entry point to get in. It's like literally just any little thing to be the jumping off point to then talk Cowboys or LeBron. It's pretty remarkable. That is, you did, please. I mean, I guess that's right. Because I did 6 minutes on it for the Open. He was on my top 10 list of quarterbacks to start a franchise with. And then there was a Cowboys segment.
There was the Connor Orr segment.
The Connor Orr segment about how are the Cowboys not. Yep. Oh, then they, right, the teases. They also, like, yeah, I do the teases, right, for the next segment. They will write teases for you. You don't have to do them, but they write a tease into the screen for every single segment. And so before Connor Orr, the teaser was, I'll ask Connor Orr directly why the Cowboys can't win the Super Bowl. Like, that was their tease. I was like, all right, tease Cowboys. There we go. Coming up. It's so, yeah, they're Cowboys, man.
I bet they use Dallas. The same ranking system that I just Googled, because I Googled top NFL fan bases, right? And the first one that pops up is the Times of India out of New Delhi. And they rank the Dallas Cowboys as number one. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, they work for Fox. They got the NFL deal. They see all of the metrics on what teams get the highest ratings nationally on all of the games. Like, it's not done by accident. They've got all of the data research and market research that you could possibly come up with. But that is mortifying and hilarious. Excellently done.
Yeah, it's, you know, bread and butter, Cowboys, LeBron, those are always, like, you know, national level, like, there's always going to have interest there. You were lucky enough, though, to talk about Team USA as this whole Cooper Flag thing starting to jump off.
And, yeah.
Like, and I felt like I hated every second of this, but I would have done the same thing if I was in your position. You had the opportunity to say a phrase that I had not heard on a national level,
but now
you get to own it, and I'm just so happy for you for it.
Cooper Flag, he won the day. He made an impression of himself with 18 seconds of viral glory. We have the footage here of what Cooper Flagg did yesterday. And it's a pull-up three over Anthony Davis. He's pretty good. Then he runs back, contests a pass, causes a turnover, gets the rock. How's my play-by-play? Passes it up the court, three-point attempt, miss. That's Cooper Flagg with the putback and the and one over Bam. And so I'm going to take this opportunity. You know, in the NFL, we had Tank for Trevor. We had Suck for Luck. Capture the flag. That's what Nets fans, you know, Jazz fans, Spurs fans, Pistons fans, you're going to be trying to capture the flag.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
But also, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. I get it.
Why didn't you go with Poop for Coop?
Yeah. Trying to be classy, man. Trying to get invited back. Capture the flag is better. Poop for Coop. That's good local radio. Capture the flag.
Capture the flag. David Haw's out there on his run, and he's really taking it up a notch. He's feeling the adrenaline after that wordplay right there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was definitely proud of that one. Made me very happy. All right, we will step aside some other sports things from it. So Mark Schlereth on Caleb was spectacular. Schlereth was just incredible. And then he also got after me pretty good. So you will enjoy Mark Schlereth not stuffing me into a locker, but it was pretty close to metaphorically stuffing me into a locker. It's next on The Score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Critics call it Empire meets Nashville meets Succession.
Afternoons on The Score.
Well, back to Matt Eberflus. You know, he talked about building championship habits, championship traits. That's what this is all about. He goes, I want my guys under pressure. I want to see how they respond, because then I know who I can count on, who I can rely on, you know, during the good times, who's going to be locked in.
Mark Schlereth works for Fox. He's excellent. And it was really cool to be out there in L.A. doing the show with Colin, and him to be in L.A. for a business trip. So he was willing to come over and be in studio. We've had him on the show maybe twice. And I know he's been on with Dan and Lawrence before. He's on Adam Amin's crew. They've got the team for Fox. But I never met him. He is as impressive as he says he is as a physical specimen. Like, he is just a block of a human being. He's very impressive, very smart, and just entertaining and excellent. And he had some stuff for me and some stuff on Caleb. But he had said on his podcast that there's a difference between being a generational talent and a generational quarterback. And about Caleb Williams, his main point seemed to revolve around the idea of structure.
I can't answer that until he plays,
until,
right? Until
it.
We watch him. I think one of the issues, one of the things that makes it hard when you talk about college football, I was talking to a college football coach who was an offensive coordinator and a head coach in the league for a long time. And I was just like, how much of your playbook do you pare down? He says about 50% less from a play standpoint, structure standpoint in college to the professional game.
Sure.
When you get into college, what you see a lot is not a lot of change of personnel. So in the NFL, you know, we'll go into three wides, which is 11 personnel, two backs, which is base, or, you know, two backs, one tight end. We'll get into 22 personnel, two tights. So we'll change these personnel groupings constantly, right? And then we'll motion and change formation. So we'll get into one formation, we'll fly to another formation, we'll motion across to a different formation. So there's a lot of movement. College football is static.
Right.
We just get into these static formations and we run them. And a lot of times what you see in the college game is, hey, pick out your best matchup. If that guy's not there, hold the ball and make a play. And there's nobody that held the ball longer in college football than Caleb Williams. So my question is, can you operate in structure? Because you get in the NFL, like college, you can survive because you can out-talent people. You can go 50-50, 50% on schedule, 50% off schedule, and you can win. You'll get your butt whipped in the NFL if you're playing that way. I always call it the 70-30 rule. I think you got to have about 70% of the time, you got to be on schedule, right? You've got to be in front of the chains. You've got to be operating.
Sure.
30% of the time when things break down, then it's okay. But what ends up happening to you, if you play off schedule all the time, you'll make some plays, and they'll be exciting. But you'll have a fumble, you'll have a sack, you'll have whatever, and you'll end up costing yourself the game as opposed to winning the game more often than not.
So the analysis there is excellent. It will be, as we get into like the nitty-gritty for Caleb, when we actually see NFL film and NFL games to see how much he's doing it, he won't be able to play as off structure in the pros as he did in college. But I, for one, am not rooting for him to abandon that part of his game. I will be saying the occasional fumble and reckless play is okay if it comes with the highlight plays. If it comes with the high ceiling plays that, you know, a handful of guys in the world can make. Because that's what makes Rodgers a four-time MVP. That's what makes Mahomes a multiple-time MVP and Super Bowl winner. Like, that ability to play out of structure, off-platform throws, that's what gives you the highest superstar ceiling. So I will take rookie mistakes on trying to push the limits of that as long as it's also coming with playmaking. Not everyone's going to feel that way because people are saying it's DJ Moore's prime. It's got to be about winning games. That can come later. I will be fine with some of that because I think that that's the part of the game that lends him to being really, really special. He then continued because I was like, all right, you seem to be throwing a little bit of a cold towel on this sort of thing. More cold water. Do you throw a cold towel?
Yeah, throw a towel right on it. Throw the towel on the heat and let it watch it burn up.
Is that something that you would do?
It can be a pleasant thing on a hot day.
Yeah.
But
it's pleasant. But
if it's a cold day, you don't want a cold
towel. Yeah. That's not what it would be. Whatever he's doing. And so I was like, all right, what are fair expectations for the Bears?
So what is fair when we see C.J. Stroud win a playoff game, throw for over 4,000 yards as a rookie with a team that nobody expected him to do that? And then you see a guy like Justin Herbert, 31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions as a rookie. Caleb comes into a 7-win team, Roma Dunze, D.J. Moore, Keenan Allen, Cole Kmet, DeAndre Swift, a defense that people think can be top 10. Like, expectation is very, very, very high. What is reasonable?
Right. No, I think 7-8 wins is a reasonable expectation.
Man, they won 7 last year. If they win 7 this year, people will be disappointed.
Sure, but I think the majority of people, think we're playing fantasy football.
Yeah,
they think because you get Keenan Allen and because you've got Adunze, as you mentioned, because you've got DJ Moore is a phenomenal player. I mean, a phenomenal player. Because you got Swift. Because they look at that like it's fantasy football. It's not. We don't play fantasy football. This is reality football.
Yeah, I never played real football.
Right.
I have played fantasy.
But I always say, if the games were played on paper, I'd have spent a lot less time on an operating table. It's not fantasy football. And so we tend to think, hey, man, all these weapons are going to make us a good football team. You know what makes you a good football team? Kicking people's ass at the line of scrimmage. That's what makes you a good football team. So I'm a believer in building a team from the inside out, not from the outside in. And I think the teams that dominate the line of scrimmage, I'll give you, I read this stat, and I don't hold me to exactly these teams because I read it a couple weeks ago, but I think the four teams that led the league in two tight end personnel groupings, kind of get big, condensed formations, right? In a day and age where we want to spread things out, right,
yeah,
and be so fancy, we want to condense with the four teams. Could you think about the four teams that led the league in, like, two tight end personnel, two back personnel, that type of, like, heavier condensed formations?
Was Kansas City one of them?
Kansas City.
Okay.
Baltimore.
Was Seattle up there?
Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And San Francisco.
Those are good teams.
Pretty good teams, right?
Yeah.
Pretty good teams.
Yeah.
And, you know, and most of those teams run the snot out of the ball.
Yep.
Most of those, like, so, you know, Kansas City a little bit different because of their tight end groupings and everything.
And receiver was a disaster last year for them.
Right, for sure. And they ended up running the ball with Pacheco pretty well. But
yeah.
The bottom line is in a day and age where a lot of teams think it's all about spreading people out, like, one thing I always tell if I'm consulting for a team or I'm talking about protections, you know, people want to spread things out because it's easier for the quarterback to see. Let me tell you, so I'll give you just a little fact here. Fat guys don't run as fast as little guys.
What?
Little guys run faster than fat people. So I want to get as many fat people on the football field as I can and have you match me with fat people on defense,
right?
Because they don't run as fast as little skinny dudes do. And skinny dudes give you blitz packages and things that are exotic, that are much tougher to pick up. So I like to condense, get big people on the football field, and fight from that standpoint.
Which makes some of the Bears' roster building decisions interesting, right? They got Gerald Everett to pair with Cole Kmet, but they also drafted Roma Dunze. If you have five offensive linemen on a field and a quarterback on a field and two tight ends on a field, you can only have either three receivers or two receivers and a running back. So is Roma Dunze going to be on the field when they're doing their two tight end sets? Like, who comes off the field, DeAndre Swift or Roma Dunze, when they're doing their two tight end sets? Probably Roma Dunze. Probably going to keep someone next to Caleb Williams in the backfield and at least have the appearance of a running game, because part of the benefit of going with two tight ends is, hey, if you go big, we throw, and if you go small, we run. That's part of the benefit of having guys that can block and catch. So I thought that was pretty good from Mark Schlereth. And then I guess I insulted the man.
That is, it's a fascinating thing, and the Bears definitely invested more in skill position than the line of scrimmage. So,
well, then wait, skill position, you and I are going to fight here, right? There's no greater skill than moving a man from point A to point B against his will.
Yes, sir.
Okay, there is no greater skill. Anybody can.
Offensive linemen are very skilled.
I could throw you a football. You can catch it, throw it back. If we did one-on-ones, I'd whip your ass out here. Okay, so I just am like, there's a skill to it.
You know what? I'm going to amend my stance and say that the offensive line is the most skilled position.
Thank you.
In the entire NFL.
You know what? Really quick.
Underappreciated.
Really, really quick. We're the only position in sport, any sport, where you match up against a guy that's a better athlete than you 100% of the time, and you're expected to beat him 100% of the time, and if you don't, he goes to the Pro Bowl, and you're a piece of garbage. Think about it. I give up. I could kill you all game long. I give up one sack, you're going to the Pro Bowl, and I'm the guy who gave up a sack and cost us a game.
Is that more technique or strength?
Everybody's strong. It's technique, especially when you're a lesser athlete, which I was my entire career.
I thought that was awesome. He knows what I meant and how the term is used.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
But he's going to defend the skill position of the offensive line. Do you think Brian Bulaga, who joins us in 20 minutes, feels the same way?
Yes.
You think that he thinks that offensive line is a skill position?
Yes.
Okay. Then whip your ass out here. Okay, so I just am like, there's a skill to it.
He also said that him and I could throw a football back and forth. He obviously did not see my first pitch at Wrigley. I don't have a great arm.
Oh, no, I sent it to him.
but he is also right that if we were trying to push each other around, he would kick my ass. It's just funny talking football with that guy. Like, I think I got a pretty good football acumen. Watch the games, think about the games, talk to a lot of people who play, read about it, et cetera. And it's like, oh, you are a football player. You know a lot about it. Like, he is like a wind him up, let him go, teach you about football. He is excellent.
It's fascinating. I mean, he played in that in the Shanahan father, the original Shanahan
with
system.
Mike Shanahan.
You know, like, and that's so cool. Like, you know, blocking for Terrell Davis and what they did. Like every year, new guy. Even after Terrell Davis was retired, like new guy were coming in and we're just going to run it at you every play.
He said a little bit of it on air, so I don't feel bad about telling a little bit more of the off air conversation. But he's on a coaching staff with Peyton Manning for a youth football team with Terrell Davis and Brandon Stokely also on the coaching staff.
Strong staff.
So it's Peyton Manning as the head coach, Stink coaches the line, Stokely coaches the receivers, and Terrell Davis coaches the running backs. That's pretty crazy.
You didn't? Do you think he teaches the 12-year-olds about like peeing your pants?
I didn't ask
you guys. You guys didn't talk about that.
That's local radio. That's local radio.
Okay.
That's funny, Shane, because I was like immediately like, what do you tell a 12-year-old? Like, how many calories are you eating a day? Yeah. You need to triple that.
Just pee your pants. The lineman's not going to want to get near you. He used to do that.
Yeah, that's why the nickname is Stink. Yes, he did. We continue to get incredible content that makes me excited for future Bears content. That's next before Brian Bilog on The Score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Doing it and doing it and doing it.
Afternoons on The Score.
Sam Hartman, QB2, is the only quarterback in this group that's going to run the 40.
That is some solid hair right there. He looks like the dude on Full House. Yeah, Uncle Jesse.
Is he the only one running?
Yeah.
I love it.
What you can do?
Showing up and competing.
Hard Knocks.
It's coming the first week of August. August 6th, I think. Is that first Wednesday? But they're doing the offseason version with the Giants. And I don't know if it's because of criticism of past seasons, if it's because this is the first time they've done an offseason version of it. They've done in-season, and obviously they've done a bunch of training camp for well over a decade. This offseason one for the Giants has been pretty good. We're getting some good stuff, and there's some Bears-adjacent content here because the Giants had the, sixth pick in the draft where they took Malik Nabers, and so they were working out Bears players and got to spend time with them, and the cameras were rolling, so here is a scout for the Giants evaluating Caleb Williams.
And we got Williams, Southern Cal.
Yeah, Caleb obviously transferred from Oklahoma. We all know at 22, you know, he had a big season, won the Heisman, a lot of success. And then they started 6-0 this past year, and then ended up losing 5 of the last 6 games. So, you know, just seeing how he dealt with that adversity, refused to talk to the media after UCLA. Obviously, you know, coming to our market, you know, that's a no-no. But other than that, you know, everything checks. I mean, the guy's a competitor, loves ball, locked in.
All right. Pretty solid. Pretty solid on the analysis there. Never had a real shot at drafting him, obviously, but they're doing their due diligence on it. They did get a chance to do a brief interview with Caleb. I think this was at the Combine. And in like the 15-minute, you know, like car wash-style rapid-fire interviews. And Brian Daboll's a character. And Daboll and Caleb got to interact.
Spearheading the quarterback interviews will be Brian Daboll, who Shane hired in 2022 after 4 successful years together in Buffalo.
Good hire.
Daboll has a PhD in quarterbacks. With an NFL resume that stretches from Brett Favre to Josh Allen, he knows how to nurture talent. As Alabama's offensive coordinator, he helped Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa win a national championship.
So if there's 70 plays in a game and there's 45 passes, you have to run this one play every time. You got it in your head? You know the play you want?
Yeah, let's do it.
Draw it up.
So I'm going to go empty. We have this guy right here. It's a fade, stick, 10-yard stop. They go cover two.
Yep.
He can keep his skinny inside of him. He can't come across the field.
So at number 3, was that hard for you relative to the range of a safety instead of being at number 2 running that inside fade?
No. Nah.
You were able to get it up and down and beat that safety?
Yeah.
You ever throw any back shoulders on those?
Yeah.
When I had Favre, we used to run this play a bunch.
Y'all have some time. 2-4 versus 11.
He would see, even if it was zone, he would feel that defender.
Yeah.
And if he could rifle it in on that inside seam, he would just, if he stopped, he'd drill it to him.
Dropping back. Favre throws a dart to the middle of the field, and it is caught.
All right, bud. Appreciate it.
There is a 40 time and a vertical jump and all those things, but, you know, you got to get down to, you know, what's the competitive stamina of the individual, the personality that he has, the commitment to the team? Those are hard things to measure by numbers.
pretty good stuff, man. Like the trying to stump him and make it like the rapid fire nature of those questions. It's cool insight into the degree of difficulty of what they're trying to put those guys through in a very, very, very short amount of time. I thought that was pretty damn cool.
Lawrence had a good point when they talked about this earlier. Do you think Caleb studied Daboll's systems and like knew that he was going to run, pick that play on the whiteboard because he knew Daboll would like perk up and be interested?
Yeah.
Caleb's a calculated dude that way and a student of the game. That's something I hope someone asks him.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, because you don't want to play for the Giants.
Well, and the Giants had no shot of picking you. But you can't say no to the interview. So I guess I'd be a little surprised if you put that much specificity into the thought for that interview. But it's certainly he might just be that sharp of a dude. It's certainly possible.
That's cool, too.
Yeah, exactly.
If that's the case, I like that.
I think that is maybe a little bit more likely. But certainly Lawrence's theory is very, very plausible as well. I just want to slide this in. We can get back to maybe a little Hard Knocks later. White Sox game is over. They won 3-1. Michael Kopech, immaculate inning. That's pretty cool. 9 pitches, 9 strikes, 3 strikeouts. Steve Stone.
9-9-9-9-9-9.
Yeah, Steve Stone just shared on Twitter, first immaculate inning for the Sox since 1923. That's 101 years. The Twins have never had one. Pretty impressive for Michael Kopech.
So is an immaculate inning for Kopech the 9 pitches, 9 strikes, 3 strikeouts, or is it just him not getting sad for a whole inning? Which one is it?
Man, that White Sox cynicism. Can't even let the dude have 45 seconds of praise doing something that your organization hasn't done in 101 years. The 9 pitch, 3 strikeout save for the immaculate inning. Kopech very happy, very proud of himself, as he should be. And there it is. Congratulations to Michael Kopech.
Didn't get sad.
Congratulations.
Baseball coverage on the Score is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. David Bakhtiari still wants to play football, rumored to be coming to the Bears, or the Bears to be a team that makes sense with some interest. We'll talk to his friend and longtime teammate and Wisconsin radio host Brian Belaga before Boog Shambi next on the Score.